Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we continue our discussion here on the Mark Steiner Show, switching gears and talking about this first anniversary of the Zimmerman acquittal. We are joined here by Dr. Raymond Winbush. Ray Winbush is director of the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University, and Edward Wyckoff Williams is a contributing editor to The Root, political contributor and special correspondent with Al Jazeera America, and a columnist and political analyst who's appeared on numerous TV and radio programs around the country. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
A pleasure to be with you, Mark.
And good to hear. Have you here as well, Ray? 410-319-8888.
You're worried, but I'm okay.
All right. you can join us here, please, at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Or you can log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner. Your thoughts on Trayvon Martin and the acquittal of Zimmerman and the recent interview we saw with Rachel Gentile about where she went between being contrite and blaming herself in some ways, but also thanking Trayvon Martin for getting her out of high school. It was a touching interview, but I didn't like the way it was conducted completely. Ray Winbush, let me start you off reflecting on this year and what it has meant and what it means now.
Well, you know, we're a year away from that verdict, and frankly, I'm disappointed in the actions of the Justice Department and Eric Holder announced in November of last year that he was going to make a decision whether or not to open up and bring new charges against George Zimmerman. Well, that never occurred. I was with Trayvon's mom in July of 2013, right after the verdict, in fact, in Phoenix, Arizona, and she was obviously at that time grief-stricken, but had hope that the Justice Department would do something. You know, that didn't happen. So a year later, and also in an election year, we're seeing this whole issue kind of being gone away. I mean, if past is prologue, and I think it is, that the Justice Department will reopen a case against an accused, some type of civil rights violation, if there's continued public pressure. And just like with Troy Davis and so many others, it fades in the past in the minds of people. And we're here, you know, we're here today where I thought we were had not public pressure kept up.
And that's an important point. And I'm going to turn it here to Edward. I mean, because you also follow this case intensely and been on the show because you cover this show intensely. I mean, this trial intensely and met with the family and the attorney. So your a sense after this year.
Well, you know, I was demoralized by the verdict. As you were, and as most people, I think, were of good conscience, regardless of race. And I think one of the things that I find most interesting about what's happened over the course of this year is how easily people forget. And so there was a sense I felt even immediately after the verdict that, for the most part, people almost accepted it. And so back to what the other guest is saying about the fact that, for all intents and purposes, a retrial on the federal level has all but become mute. That's also the mood of the country. I think that it's not that people are callous. I feel like they're sort of apathetic, and they've begun to accept that the lives of black boys can end in this way and there be no justice, and that's just the way things are. And that's why throughout the entire ordeal, I kept referring to it as a Jim Crow-style trial. It was a Jim Crow-era event in that even though we believed, deep down, a lot of us feared that this would happen, that this man would walk, and this child's life would sort of just be forgotten in a way. And I think that, yes, he's become iconic. His story has become iconic, and it started a movement that I think still has legs. But I'm not quite sure if it's what it should be. And I fear that, you know, I'm sure Eric Holder wanted to bring a federal case. I don't know what the bar is legally for that. I think that it would have been equally demoralizing had they brought a federal case and failed in court. So I don't want to put too sort of heavy a burden on his shoulders to do that for the legacy of black America. But a part of me wishes that a trial had been done correctly at both the state level and the federal level, because this is where we are. I almost have very little to say because it hurts so much.
And Ray, I want you to just, could you reflect a little bit on, I saw you write a bit on Facebook about this, about what happened with Rachel Gentil, then her feeling some of the blame, but also thanking Trayvon. It was a very complex interview.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interviewer didn't really understand Rachel at all. Go ahead, Ray. Let me start with you, Ray, then go over to Edward.
Well, you know, I think is, you know, Rachel Gentil became kind of the focus on him as a witness during that trial. And for me as a psychologist, I was looking at her testimony as being the most compelling during the entire episode, because other than Zimmerman himself, she was the last person to talk to Trayvon. And the fact that a year later she's doing very well in the sense of, you know, she's going to college. Tom Joyner was very instrumental in making sure that she finished high school. She's turned her life around, but she still wears what I call, or what is called, survivor's guilt, that she could have done more, she could have testified differently. I think she testified from her heart. She told the truth and nothing but the truth. And I think with a lot of African Americans and white Americans in general learned from this is that the law, in quotation marks, has nothing to do with justice. The law was followed to the letter, but justice wasn't served in that conviction. That trial. And Rachel, I think, reflects the guilt that she didn't do her best job, you know, and she did. And I don't hold her responsible for anything, and hopefully she won't do that either.
What were you about to say, Edward?
I agree completely, 100% with everything he just said. I think the survivor's guilt is reflective of what was flawed about the entire case, Mark, which is that Trayvon Martin was on trial for his own murder. And Rachel Gentil, therefore, served as a character witness as opposed to an eyewitness via the phone, right? And so just the very basis of that set up the case in a way that we all, I guess, throughout the entire ordeal knew was happening, that Trayvon Martin's past and his dalliances as a teenager were all more important than the fact that there was a grown man with a gun, with a violent past, who had been arrested before for violent behavior, for attacking police officers, for domestic violence against girlfriends, and then after the fact against his wife. This was a grown man with a past of violence.
Yeah.
But yet, that was not what was the focus of the case. The case was focused on whether or not a 17-year-old had smoked marijuana once. And so, with regard to Rachel Gentil, in order for her to properly represent Trayvon, it was almost an impossible feat for her, because all she had to do was tell the truth, which she did, but even the truth was not enough in this case to bring about justice. And that just goes to show just not the fault lines of race in this country, but there is a serious fault line in our judicial system to actually serve justice.
Let me hear 410-319-8888. I'd like to have our listeners join us and reflect on what this anniversary means of Zimmerman's acquittal and Trayvon Martin's death. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We have like 10 minutes left in this segment. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 410-319-8888. It ties directly into the conversation we were having earlier about changes in our judicial system with Judge Andre Davis and others in the program we had yesterday about the nature of violence and self-defense in the history of America. 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones. And Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm listening to this. What absolute nonsense. Let's deal with the truth. First off, you guys are so obsessed.
Stop yelling, Bruce, and just talk.
Okay, listen carefully. You guys are so obsessed with race, you couldn't possibly accept reality. Here's the bottom line. Let me tell you something about George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman was instrumental, put flyers out, and got local attention from the local radio station to have a sheriff or law enforcement person removed from office because he beat up a homeless black man. So don't, first off, don't play the stuff that he's a racist. That's nonsense. Second thing, Trayvon Martin was not a child. 17 is not a child. A child is 12 years and under. So that's another thing.
Who made that definition?
And, well, no. You want to hear dialogue, but you only want to hear dialogue that supports your opinion. You're biased, Mr. Steiner.
Hold on, just to stop you, Bruce. I get sick of you telling me that I'm biased. We just had a program on here with people who supported incarceration and mandatory minimums and those who didn't. We have conservative, liberal, left, and libertarians on the show all the time debating issues. I am not biased. And yes, do I have a bias about racism in America? I do, and I talk about it often. But I'm not. This is a show that has definitely always been known for having every side on here. But let's go to the question that Bruce raised about race. Ray, would you like to respond?
Well, Rose is what you call a low-information voter. I guess that's the new term for it. People who have incredibly strong opinions with virtually no information about it. I mean, I could spend some time, you know, talking about what she just said, but I think that attitude is what creates the atmosphere that we have, not only surrounding the Trayvon Martin trial, but the killing of young black boys in this country in general. So I really don't even want to waste time responding to, again, low-information voters like Rose.
David Miller writes in, ongoing public pressure, activism, and preparing our children to live in a world that isn't fair, is what David Miller just tweeted in, 410-319-8888. And Kadria, you're on the air. Or Kadria, I'm sorry, no, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Kadria, you're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Okay. Trayvon Martin is the, what's the young 14, Medgar Evers, not the Medgar, the young boy. The other one got killed at 14 years old.
Emmett Till.
Trayvon Martin, sir, is the Emmett Till of the 20th century. It is a long-established history that these people, and I do mean Caucasian people, excluding you, Mr. Steiner, because I don't think you have a prejudice bone in your body. They have no intention of giving justice to us here or anywhere in the world where non-white people are. That's been established. Years ago, Mr. Elijah Muhammad had an article in his paper termed the black policeman and the role the black policeman should play in really helping enforce and at the same time strengthening their boys and their people so that we can get justice in this country. It's a shame. I've lived in Chicago, New York, and now Baltimore. I've seen police brutality against blacks. And believe me, when they come in your neighborhood, it's 10 cars for one black man. You hear me? The whites stand around like, here's one. We got to, where's the rope? We have them. Okay? And the black policemen, they're nothing but puppets in the white man's show to extend the wish. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Let me go back to you, Edward. I think that...
I think that was really powerful because it... What she just said is so true, but it also is very insightful to this end, that what the Stand Your Ground laws essentially did, because she focused on black on police officers and police brutality against black people, what the Stand Your Ground law has done and what that verdict did was sort of to institutionalize police brutality against blacks now in the hands of civilians. It has justified civilian action that plays out the way that we see often, particularly in inner cities, the actions of police against young black males. And so I think what is good about what the family has done, what Sabrina and Tracy have done by establishing the Trayvon Martin Foundation, by going across the country, rallying against these Stand Your Ground laws, is that I guess on at least a micro level, things can begin to change, or at least attention can be brought to bear. Obviously, the problem is in Washington, where we have an entire Congress completely against gun control legislation or changing gun control. And so it's going to be a long, hard-fought battle. But I think at the very least, attention is being placed where it needs to be placed, which is really about gun control legislation.
Now you have a mixed thought about that, don't you, Ray Boombush? I can feel it.
I'm just sorry. I just see race as a basis for understanding nearly everything in the country. And it doesn't mean that if I've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I just believe that at the core of American society, woven into the fabric of this nation, is racism and race. And something that we don't want to talk about is something that we don't want to, we don't want to talk about with regard to the justice system, with regard to health care, with regard to educational system. We don't want to talk about with regard to anything. So I just see race as the best point to begin an analysis of whatever occurs in this society, because it's so embedded in this nation.
And I think that's, there's so much here to wrestle with on this one-year anniversary, and it's interesting to me that we haven't seen much major media wanting to talk
at all
to reflect on this 1 year, to want to talk to Trayvon Martin's parents, to think about what this means and where we go and what kind of discussion we continue having. Because, you know, the way our media works, it's here one day and then it's gone the next. Edward, in our business, that's the problem with it. We don't follow through. We don't keep on things.
We don't. Yeah. And it's almost as if the media has ADHD or ADD, right? and I think it's just reflective of the times we live in, the zeitgeist of the moment. I don't know if there's anything to be said of that, but I definitely agree with your co-host in that race is one, the original sin of the, or racism is the original sin of this country, but these problems are so deeply embedded that they imbue everything, and they certainly imbue our politics. And so, you know, the general populace seem to hate when we talk about racism against this president, but it imbues absolutely every political argument against him, and every political movement, particularly the Tea Party, against him. And so when we're talking about Trayvon, you know, and I wrote about this many, many times, the correlations, I think, between the way Trayvon was framed in the media and the way this president is framed, and the way every black boy on every corner or in every schoolroom is framed in the minds of the American people. And that is the true problem here. And I really don't know how to get at a solution.
Well, we'll come to that in our coming conversations and have you both back to just wrestle that and get others on here as well. That was Edward Wyckoff Williams, contributing editor to The Root, political contributor and special correspondent of Al Jazeera America, Dr. Ray Winbush, director of the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University. David Miller, I'll close with this tweet. He just wrote in again, Trayvon Martin's humanity was on trial. Race still matters. We are solely responsible for keeping our children safe. Thank you, too, so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, it's time to start Soundbites, our weekly look at food farming and our environment. We're going out here with the Austrian composer Carl Czerny, who died on this day in 1857. We'll be right back.